Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Mine is a very low-tech presentation from an old man. First section, we look at some basic statistics. There are about 18 million voters in Taiwan. About 75% of them voted at the presidential election. Actually, a lower voter turnout rate than previous presidential elections. As you all know, the Kuomintang candidate, Ma Ying-jeou, won. He secured 51.6% of the votes. Actually, a drop from the previous election in 2008, he got 58.45% of the votes. Then the opposition candidate, or the main opposition candidate, Tsai Ing-wen, from the Democratic Progressive Party, she only managed to get 45.6% of the votes. It is interesting to observe that the minor party candidate, James Song, from the People's Party, he received only 2.77% of the votes, explaining partially for Ma Ying-jeou's victory. There was, of course, a very serious concern on the part of the blue camp that because there were two candidates, James Song might secure too many votes or might steal too many votes from Ma Ying-jeou, causing his electoral defeat. But that didn't happen. James Song only got less than 3% of the votes, and thus helping Ma Ying-jeou to secure his victory. Compared with the previous election, Ma Ying-jeou got 0.6 million votes less, 0.76 million votes less, and Tsai Ing-wen got 0.65 million votes more than the previous DPP, Democratic Progressive Party candidate. So that was not too bad a performance for Tsai Ing-wen. She also made a very touching address after her electoral defeat. So, and her performance was largely appreciated by the opposition party, which may explain that she may have a chance to come back and challenge the next KMT candidate again in 3 years' time. At the same time, the Kuomintang, the governing party, also secured a majority in the legislature, 64 seats out of 113 seats, 64 out of 113. So it was a very good performance for the governing party, winning the presidency, retaining the majority in the legislature, meaning a safe government in the 4 years to come. The election results also showed that because of the reform of the electoral system, the trend has been much more towards a two-party system. The minor parties find it difficult to survive, find it difficult to win seats even in the legislature elections. Incidentally, people were happy with the election results. About 60% of the respondents in various surveys indicated satisfaction with the performance, which indicated a mature political culture and a decline of serious grievances. A lot of observers use the word baiting to describe the mood among the supporters for the Democratic Progressive Party. So there was obviously much less grievances, much less baiting. People accepted, well, there was an election, DPP party candidate didn't do too badly, she lost, she performed well. And of course, the very next day, people's attention turned to bread and butter issues. How will the new government handle the European financial crisis, the decline in exports? Will the business community step up its investment after the elections, and so on? I would like also, section two, I would also like to quote a little bit from a Asian Network for Free Elections, a free NGO going there to observe the elections. This international NGO certainly expressed satisfaction with the elections. The voter turnout rate was respectable, high. Taiwan people were very keen in the elections. You see, they stopped polling about 4 p.m. in the afternoon, and the results came out about 7, 8 p.m. The results became known. Very, very efficient. And people did not have to wait. In Hong Kong, people were rather lazy. We have voting hours extended until 10:30 p.m. to allow maximum time for people to vote because of lack of enthusiasm in general. Taiwan people are very different. They all go and vote very enthusiastically. 4 p.m., you close the polling booth. 7, 8 p.m., the results are, well, in fact, immediately after the end voting, the votes will start to count and people could see the result. And about 7, 8 p.m., the results were known. So there were obvious satisfaction that the results were fair, the election was open, fair, and so on. There was not much violence. In the previous elections, there were shooting incidents and so on. This time, there was a general lack of violence, and people were happy. Asian Network for Free Elections nonetheless raised a few criticisms reflecting the political culture, and I would like to mention them. There were criticisms of the local judicial organs and the local police agencies that sometimes they were seen to not to be perfectly neutral. There were perceptions that, of course, those organs in the South tended to favor the Democratic Progressive Party, those organs in the North, they tended to favor Kuomintang and so on. Then buying votes has always been a problem. It has been part of the culture. Buying votes in the sense that the candidates are always expected to give some small gifts to the voters, to entice them to come and vote, and they give small gifts and so on. This practice, unfortunately, has been maintained. Especially in the rural areas. Voters are given free meals, given free trips, picnics, and so on, and causing elections to be quite expensive. Certainly, this type of behavior patterns has been in decline, but they still remain, and this is certainly a problem. As a result of this, it is generally believed that all the candidates spend more money than the legal limits. There were obvious legal limits on electoral expenditure, but everybody believed that all parties spent more. And that was, of course, not very fair and not very good. At the same time, there were criticisms, of course, against the Kuomintang. People would say, Kuomintang is the richest political party in the world with a lot of assets, and the Kuomintang also has control of a lot of TV stations, media, and therefore it has it enjoyed a certain edge in the elections. This network also suggested that there should be more involvement of neutral observers in the monitoring of the elections, that various civil society NGOs should also take part in monitoring the elections. And another controversial issue is that the policemen, the military, they normally could not vote because there was this arrangement. You had to go back to your hometown, to your place of registration to vote. And sometimes it became quite costly, because if you are working in Taipei and you live in Tainan, then you have to spend a bit of money to take a train and so on. And policemen, the military, they usually can't vote. The third part, I would like to suggest that there was a sigh of relief, not only from mainland China. Certainly mainland China was very happy with the results. Beijing certainly feared an electoral victory on the part of the Democratic Progressive Party. There was also a sigh of relief from the United States, to some extent from Japan, to some extent from Hong Kong. So people were quite happy, status quo maintained, no change, and so on. I would like to offer my observations, and I wrote something immediately after the elections. Basically, there was quite a bit of dissatisfaction with the performance of the incumbent president, Ma Ying-jeou. He was handsome, he was clean, but he was seen to be incompetent. But then the dissatisfaction was not enough to turn around the electoral results, and we shall explain why a little bit later. People were not too happy, but at the same time, people were not unhappy enough to vote for the opposition party, and Ma Ying-jeou won the election. As we were saying, there was less this sense of grievances, and people naturally behave in a more mature manner. As democracy matures, as the political culture matures, people focus more on bread and butter issues that I just described. I shall also focus a little bit on the young voters, and our previous speaker did a great job in describing the grievances of the young people in East Asia. Certainly the young people in Taiwan are equally frustrated, and they are also full of grievances. Most of them finished university, they had difficulty finding jobs as well, and most of them, just like their Japanese counterparts, complain about their low salaries, the lack of prospects in their jobs, and they were unhappy. However, this new voters, I shall explain later, did not quite vote for the opposition. Initially, of course, they were unhappy. They certainly had some expectations from the opposition party. But in the end, most of them voted for Ma Ying-jeou. There was also a lot of speculation about what will Ma Ying-jeou do in his second term. Presidents in their second term normally have a free hand. And initially, from the most optimistic point of view, there was this kind of expectation. So Ma Ying-jeou won the election in January. The Party Congress of China will be held sometime September, October, November. So theoretically, Hu Jintao would like to have some kind of breakthrough, representing a very nice political legacy for him. But this certainly did not happen. There was no obvious mandate in the election for the president to move further in the improvement of cross-strait relations, and the status quo is likely to be maintained. And in fact, there are suggestions that Beijing may not be too happy with Ma Ying-jeou, because Ma Ying-jeou already indicated that it would be very difficult for him to move forward without a strong domestic consensus, without obvious endorsement of the domestic community, which obviously is still lacking. And this means you cannot expect a lot of progress, and it has therefore been suggested that somebody in Beijing may be a little bit unhappy, maybe a little bit impatient, but I think leaders in Beijing are sophisticated enough to have this understanding that you really cannot push Ma Ying-jeou too hard. Now let's then look at the influence of Beijing. Beijing made some mistakes in the 96 election, in the 2000 elections. Beijing severely criticized the opposition in the year 2000, generating a backlash. So Beijing learns the lesson. In the 2004-2008 presidential elections, Beijing kept extremely quiet. Even all the official think tank researchers in Beijing on Taiwan issues were told to keep quiet, not to give interviews to the international media. So Beijing tried hard, neutral, quiet. This time, Beijing, of course, also managed to do something in support of Ma Ying-jeou. The most obvious thing was to arrange all kind of cheap flights from the Chinese coast for the Taiwanese workers to fly back to Taiwan to vote on election day. And this was certainly an indicator of support. And above all else, almost all major business leaders on the day before election came out to appeal for stable relations across the straits, meaning supporting Ma Ying-jeou's cross-straits policy. And that was supposed to be a very important factor reflecting, facilitating Ma Ying-jeou's victory. The victory margin was wider than expected. In the case of Taiwan, it is quite interesting. The polls were said to be rather unreliable because the voters already cultivated the habit of trying to deceive the pollsters. So the polls were said to be very unreliable, especially, say, when a pro-KMT paper, newspaper, rang up the voters, all the DPP supporters would try to deceive the pollster. So, and vice versa. So polls were said to be very unreliable. However, there is some kind of indicator. The underground casinos opened bets for the presidential elections, and they were said to be rather reliable indicators. So it's a bit like the British gambling agencies. They did offer you the ratio of the bets. And according to the underground casinos, the general expectation was that Ma Ying-jeou would win by about 200,000 votes. Subsequently, he won more than by a wider margin than that. So it also reflects a little bit the culture. As we were saying, the influence from Beijing was obvious, subtle, but effective. Let me give you some statistics. There were 1.2 million mainland Chinese tourists going to Taiwan, visiting Taiwan in the year 2011. So a very important source of tourism income. There are now, at the end of the year 2011, there are close to 600 direct flights weekly over the Taiwan Straits. So almost 100 flights per day, 600 per week. Certainly with the help of Beijing, with the tolerance and support of Beijing, in May 2009, Taiwan was able to join the World Health Assembly as an observer under the name of Chinese Taipei. There was also a diplomatic truce, and all the 23 countries recognizing Taiwan remained Taiwan supporters through the persuasion of Beijing. Beijing said that don't switch your diplomatic recognition across the lines. We are not interested. Please help Taiwan. It was obvious that countries like Paraguay, for example, was all ready to switch to Beijing. And Paraguay continues to recognize Taiwan through the persuasion of Beijing. So, and countries like Nicaragua also behave likewise. So in the Chinese sense, Beijing has been giving face to the Ma Ying-jeou administration. And now Taiwan people holding Republic of China passports can go visa-free to more than 100 countries in the world. So Beijing certainly has been helping. However, Beijing also feels a little bit of the shock. As we all know, now there are probably 400 million internet users and cell phone subscribers in mainland China, 400 million out of a population of 1.3 billion. they have pretty free access to the election scene in Taiwan. And at the same time, the Chinese authorities did not make any efforts to block or disturb this coverage. So a lot of the people in China, almost the entire educated public, was able to follow elections in Taiwan. And there were obvious suggestions. There were obvious suggestions from Chinese people and say, look, the Chinese across the Taiwan Straits, they can enjoy full democracy. Why can't we? Why? We are all Chinese. There are no arguments that democracy is not appropriate for Chinese and so on. So much so that Global Times is a subsidiary of People's Daily, owned by the New China News Agency. Global Times had to publish an article warning the naive bloggers that this call for similar elections on the mainland would cause tremendous chaos in China. So the official media had to warn the Chinese public, this is not for us, this is inappropriate for us, and so on. So there is this demonstration effect, and certainly people in China can ask this question, why can't we? And there is certainly a sense of pressure on the part of the Chinese authorities. Section 5, let us look at a very sensitive issue, the identity issue. This is, of course, very much an electoral issue in Taiwan, in the Taiwanese democratization process. Ever since democracy has been developing in Taiwan, this remains a very serious issue that is for independence of Taiwan or for reunification of Taiwan with the mainland. And this also explains the sense of grievances, this baiting that we have been talking about. To outside observers, some people may even suggest that this concern, or sometimes you may even say obsession with the reunification independence issue has been unhealthy, to the extent that in the year 2004 presidential election, Chen Shui-bian was seen to be quite corrupt by then, and the economy of Taiwan was not doing well, and there was this saying in southern Taiwan, that is to say, you have an empty stomach, you still vote for Chen Shui-bian. So, this very slogan certainly reflected this lack of rationale, lack of rational thinking in elections. Obviously, in most elections, like in a coming presidential election, everybody is focusing on the economy. If the economy doesn't do well, it will be bad news for Barack Obama. But in the case of Chen Shui-bian, you have this sense of support for Chen Shui-bian in southern Taiwan. Yes, he didn't do well in the economy, but we are going to support him nonetheless. However, you have a very strong phenomenon of what the American political scientists would say a kind of Me Too-ism on the part of the Kuomintang. So the Kuomintang actually borrowed all the slogans from the Democratic Progressive Party concerning this identity issue. The Kuomintang tried to emphasize its identification with Taiwan, its commitment to the protection of the interests of the population in Taiwan. The emphasis was on pride in being Taiwanese, love of the island as home, the valuing of unity in diversity, and so on. All these actually were favorite DPP, Democratic Progressive Party, themes. So you see, first of all, on the identification issue, the Kuomintang tried to borrow the slogans from the opposition party. And of course, because in a presidential election, it's a simple, you have to win the absolute majority of the votes. So there is a strong tendency for both parties to come to the center in order to secure an electoral victory. That happened with Jiang Cheng-ping in the year 2008. This also happened with Tsai Ing-wen. And the Kuomintang also behaved likewise. And of course, the weakness of the Democratic Progressive Party on the identification issue, on the close straits relations issue, was exposed because Tsai Ing-wen was unable to explain how she could maintain good relations across the Taiwan Straits if she won the presidency. And people wondered how, on the basis of her refusal to accept the One China principle, she could still maintain a healthy dialogue, a correct relationship, if not close, too close a relationship with Beijing, and then also explain the effectiveness of the appeal of the business leaders that I just mentioned exactly on the day before the election. And Ma Ying-jeou, of course, apparently made the mistake. He did raise the issue of opening peace talks with Beijing in his second term. That appeared to be rather unpopular. And according to public opinion polls, his popularity rating dipped considerably. So much so that he had to alter his position, and therefore his tremendous emphasis that, yes, while talking to Beijing may be an option, we need a very strong domestic consensus, we must have the clear endorsement from the people of Taiwan, to the extent even that on opening peace talks with Beijing, he may have to think about the idea of referendum so as to demonstrate that he has the clear-cut endorsement of the people. The issue of referendum, of course, is highly sensitive in the eyes of Beijing. It is a taboo because a referendum on talks with Beijing may also be a referendum for independence, which is certainly a very, very sensitive topic in the eyes of Beijing. Now let us look at the young voters. And this is very much in line with what our prestigious first speaker has been talking about. There are 1.2 million new voters. That is to say, those who are just qualified to vote. In Taiwan, they call this 首投族, that is the first-time voters. And as we were saying, there is considerable dissatisfaction among the among this young group. Let us look at the initial lead. As we were saying, all the time, young people were said to be more idealistic, they demand more, and they are unhappy with their lot, as we have just explained. And at the same time, they think that the Kuomintang is old and losing touch, especially in the days of Ma Ying-jeou's predecessors, people like Lan Jian and so on. So initially, we saw that the Democratic Progressive Party, Tsai Ing-wen, managed to have an early lead. In April 2011, some months before the elections, polls indicated that Tsai Ing-wen was leading by 51% to 42%, 51 to 42, 9% lead among this group of 20 to 29-year-olds. The lead slightly expanded by September, 4 or 5 months before the election, by to the margin of 50 to 38. 50 for Tsai Ing-wen, 38 for Ma Ying-jeou. However, according to the polls, just before the election, the lead actually reversed. On January the 6th, the polls indicated that Ma Ying-jeou enjoyed the lead of 41% to 39%, with 9% going to James Song. And after polling, after the elections, there were again opinion surveys held asking these young people, and these polls indicated that in fact the lead was larger. 45% going to Ma Ying-jeou, 37% for Chai Ing-wen. So Ma Ying-jeou was leading actually by 8%. And only 3% going to James Song. So again, the decline in support for James Song, the third-party candidate, facilitated or helped the victory of Ma Ying-jeou. People in Taiwan do not strongly identify with political parties, or at least they want to hide the party identity, as reflected consistently by opinion polls. So in the year 2010, these young people who declared support for parties, actually only 39% indicated that they clearly supported a party. And of this 39%, about 20% supported KMT, 18% supported the Democratic Progressive Party, only 1.2% supported a third party, a small party. Let us look at the swing of these young people, and which also reflected why Ma Ying-jeou won. Now, of course, we were saying that young people were unhappy. Most of the young people in Taiwan managed to finish college, as Professor just said. And, of course, they have high expectations. And they were persuaded by the criticisms of the Ma Ying-jeou administration. Because when Ma Ying-jeou first went for president, and he won in the year 2008, he made promises. He made promises that there would be 6% annual growth rate, 30,000 per capita GDP, unemployment rate below 3%, 6-3-3. So that was his slogan. And of course, the opposition was quick to point out, you failed to achieve all three of these objectives. So you failed, didn't work. And of course, as we were saying, the young people obviously felt the same. I mean, unemployment rate was high. Per capita GDP did not rise very well. Economic growth rate, not too respectable, etc. And as we were saying, Ma Ying-jeou also did a lot of things to attract the support of these young voters. Ma Ying-jeou, in his campaign, used a lot of Taiwanese Mandarin. Those who know Taiwan culture will appreciate that in the use of the Chinese language, the Taiwan people, they have their own expressions and so on. And Ma Ying-jeou certainly avoided the classical Chainese mainlander type of expressions, very much used these young people's Taiwanese Mandarin expressions, and he also chose two spokesmen who are under 30 years of age. So you can see an old party like KMT, he had to do something along these lines. And apparently, as we were saying, the young people somehow managed to be persuaded to change their earlier voting preferences. The Taiwan young people don't do too well, just like the Japanese other counterparts. In the year 2010, 3.6 million employees in Taiwan earn less than 750 euros a month. So the gap between the rich and poor is widening. Quite a number of employees, 3.6 million, earn less than 750 euros a month. In fact, if you look at the salaries of fresh graduates, they had been falling. In the year 2011, fresh graduates earn about 26,000 something NT dollars, Taiwan dollars. And compared with 5 years ago, they in fact earn several hundred less. And even compared with the initial salaries in 1998, they still earned less. So by a small margin. But of course, if you also take into consideration of inflation, that was substantial. So actually, the young graduates in 2011 earned less than 1998 in absolute dollars. And you certainly could see the situation. So this explained why the young voters ultimately were not persuaded and switched back to Ma Ying-jeou. They were initially unhappy with the status quo. They had their grievances. They wanted a change. But subsequently, they preferred to stick with the status quo. And this appeared to be the major factors for the victory of Ma Ying-jeou. But certainly, Ma Ying-jeou has not been performing very well. His popularity rating is extremely low, about 15%, 16% at the moment. And again, this handsome, clean politician appears to be very incompetent in handling domestic and foreign policy issues, and people are extremely unhappy. At the same time, we do not see any major initiatives on the part of the Democratic Progressive Party. They certainly elected a new party chairman, a rather old gentleman of very polished experience and party politician, Su Jingchang. He recreated a China Affairs Department. He formed a China Affairs Committee within the party, indicating his priority, his accorded to the cross-race issue, but again, showing no new initiatives nonetheless. I think Beijing is certainly a little bit worried that with the present performance of Ma Ying-jeou, there may well be a change of government in 3-4 years. But of course, politics is still very solvent in Taiwan. I shall stop here, and hopefully we have a few minutes for quick questions and answers. Thank you very much.
Looks like time 8 minutes.
We can only guess, because as we were saying, young people are unhappy with their conditions. They are not happy with the performance of the Ma Ying-jeou administration because of his failure to deliver. But then they were afraid of a serious change. I think Taiwanese people are practical enough to understand that the economy of Taiwan is now highly dependent on the mainland economy. The two economies are very integrated, and a disruption in the cross-strait political and economic relationship will be economically very costly. And as I was saying, the fact that almost all major business leaders came out to appeal for stable cross-strait relations probably convinced the hesitant young voters, as well as the ordinary voters, not to opt for a change of government. They certainly do not want to see Taiwan moving closer to the mainland, but they obviously believe that a cordial, at least correct relationship with the mainland, essential for the health of the Taiwan economy. And young people naturally are concerned with their jobs, with economic growth in the island.
Okay. I have a speculative question. Yes. the relationship between Taiwan and China is getting closer and closer and closer. How far is Taiwan now from the situation where Hong Kong and Macau are? Could you speculate upon this?
I think Taiwan, of course, is very different from Hong Kong and Macau. Taiwan still considers itself an independent country. And it has its own defense. It has support from the United States and the international community. There is also the Taiwan Straits. If you talk to the Taiwan people, they will say they still can't trust Beijing, and they would like to maintain the status quo. Obviously, they want the status quo, no change. There is a small minority who would like to see eventual unification, but a very large majority, over half, would like status quo. We don't want to think anything else. Another small minority, slightly larger than the pro-unification minority, another small minority would like to say status quo now, eventual independence, but this is still a minority. What they fear is that if you, they typically would say, I cannot risk everything that I have on negotiations with Beijing. And that is exactly why this lack of support for peaceful for negotiations leading to a peace agreement. And I think not only Ma Ying-jeou is well aware of this, Chinese leaders are well aware of this. At the turn of the century, Chinese leaders appear to be a little bit impatient, and there was a suggestion that we need a timetable, otherwise we cannot drag on forever. But now I think they are sophisticated enough to understand you cannot talk about a timetable. If it is status quo, good relations, that perhaps is what you can ask for at the moment. Okay. Thank you very much.